the races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, and about five, make it 8 minutes in to hour three. Thanks to Tony Alivato from the New York Racing Association to talk about the deal with Fox. A couple of things. Papo Morales is going to join us here, and I'm just seeing that, just retweeted, in fact, that Darren Rogers, Derby Media himself, has sent out the list of late nominees for Derby. Here they are, or not just Derby, for Triple Crown. 6,000, you know, you can register for, you know, for $600. You nominate early. If you miss that, you get to do this one for $6,000. After that, you better reach deep into the pocket. Here's the... Yeah, you know, there's a few names that we already know, of course. Weyburn, who was not nominated, and who goes in the wood on Saturday, your Gotham winner, of course. Panadol, and I didn't realize Panadol wasn't pre-nominated, actually. And that's an interesting piece of news, because he got 40 points out of the UAE Derby. So that kind of gives an indication that Sheikh Hamdan, the Shadwell team, is giving serious consideration to sending Panadol. That's what that says. Why wouldn't you? I guess. And of course, New York bred, right? The Bromans, that'd be great for Chet Broman and Mary to have a of course, another, you know, high-profile horse with an opportunity. Hockey Dad got nominated. Helium, of course, who's running in Derby. They had to slip the 6,000. And then a couple of lesser-known types. Backring Luck, who I know won a race at Oaklawn last week or a couple of weeks ago. I don't know much more than that. I just saw that horse win at Oaklawn. That's all I remember. Carruthers, who I don't know if I know the name or not. Carruthers, that one I think is new to me, to be honest. Carruthers. It's My House. That's the horse that won the Turf Paradise Derby. That'll tell you. That I know. It's My House. Bob Hess, I know, trains. May the Horse Be With You, nominated late as well. And Tis Mandate. Those are the nine late nominees. Interesting. The most notable to me, to some degree, is Panadol. Because we're curious about what Rebel's Romance, you know, and Panadol, you know, where they stand. And actually, that new treasure as well. You know, got enough points, you know, to make the top 20. And we also have to hear soon from Darren, you know, what the status is of the Japanese and European road horses, if they're taking... taking things seriously, that you know, most often they've bypassed. And I think there's one more. There's that Cardinal Stakes to be run, and tomorrow, in fact, the Cardinal runs at Chelmsford tomorrow, the 1 mile opportunity on the synthetic. So we'll get some of that stuff from Marty and Jay maybe tomorrow or Friday with today's Wednesday. I might get Marty in early tomorrow to do Keeneland. There's no Easter card, so maybe we'll get Marty in tomorrow if it suits his. He and I were he was texting me earlier, so I'll ask Marty. All right. I'm distracted enough. Let's get back to it. And now I'm seeing that Carruthers is a Mishawish cult. That David Simcock trains, and won a last seen in February at Southwell. Holy cow. All right. Good horse can come from anywhere, right? That's I guess. All right. So that there, now you know more than you did 3 minutes ago about Carruthers. Papo is standing by. Papo Morales, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good. How was Form to Win weekend for you?
It was average. It was good for the individual races and the verticals, but the multis, I just tried to key everything not Honor Code, but Shug Force.
Oh, Greatest Honor, yeah.
Yeah, Greatest Honor, Lord. It's been one of those mornings. I try to key everything off him for the multis, and struck out, you know. They don't pay 4 or 5 or 5 of 6. But that's the way that it goes, and, you know, the verticals were okay. I mean, the only price, I know we talked about Churn and Burn, but he wasn't, I mean, I think he was the third or fourth choice. But actually in the Appleton, Form to Win had Grace Fable and Renaissance Frolic virtually 1-2. So that was kind of the race that made the day for that exacto. But, decent weekend. No home runs hit, but the ship is still sailing, so to say.
Absolutely. I want to touch on we'll obviously handicap on Friday, but I wanted you to talk about a couple of things in advance of tomorrow. Another Twitch show tomorrow, 4 o'clock.
Yeah, 4 o'clock. And the races at Keeneland Friday will be on Form to Win tomorrow. So I'll cover some of those races also. And actually, see, now that you mentioned it, when you have Marty on tomorrow, I'd like to know the grass condition at Keeneland. We're supposed to get a hard freeze here Friday morning, 24 degrees.
Really?
So I'm anticipating that, you know, when they had that freeze, there's moisture already in the grass, and when it freezes and then unfreezes, I'm going to say the grass is probably not going to be rated firm, but we'll just have to see. But I'd like to hear Marty's input, because I'm in Louisville, he's in Lexington, but actually they're supposed to be colder than us Friday morning. So it'll just be interesting, especially for those grass races. I've had some interest in how it's being rated.
Well, and you know, Marty's actually Louisville based, and so he and kind of, you know, he'll make forays over, but I'm checking with him now actually to see if he's up for doing that. So I'll find out while we're on the air here. All right, and we'll get. I'll bring that up with him. Absolutely. I wanted you, though, to talk about I had a fun conversation with Alex last night. Actually, we were on the phone a half an hour. I was running up his bill from Australia. A couple of features that we haven't discussed, and I'm curious if you want to touch on them in some of the things that people have been curious about. I mean, including, you know, the sim bet and you know, some of the other bells and whistles that we haven't really fleshed out or even pointed out.
Yeah, so the sim bet, I covered it a little bit on the last Twitch show, and maybe I'll do some this show. I gotta have the live odds, so the pools have to be open for me to be able to play around with the sim bet. But what it does is, you know, you use the Form to Win to, you know, star the horses that you kind of want to key in on, and then from a win perspective you can just press the sim bet, the calculator tab, and it, you know, you tell it how much you want to spend on this particular race, and it basically, now it's only in the win pool, but it, you know, tells you how to structure your bets if you're, you know, dutching, if you want to dutch maybe the favorite in the long shot, or if you're against the favorite, that's also a great time to dutch a couple of combinations. But that's, you know, it's a sim bet option. You know, it's it's a fake bank, so to say, so you can reset it at the end of the day if you weren't successful. But, yeah, it's just a great option to kind of help you. And also, just if you're at the track, you can just walk up to the teller, and if you want to play two horses in the wind pool, you can, you know, tell them how you want to disseminate your money. And, you know, it's all based off dutching, which takes into account the current odds. So a horse that's, you know, 7-2 is going to, you're going to put more money on that horse than you would a horse that's, you know, 8 or 9-1. But what you're trying to do with dutching is just maximize your payout. So if either one of those combinations wins, you're getting the greatest outcome in terms of dollars of payout.
I'm curious because, it comes up every so often. Have you been a ladder better in that regard, the ladder system, you know, in terms of, you know, striating the amount of when you dutch? I've never really, I think I can count on one hand the number of times I've bet, you know, more than one horse to take the Derby out, where you might have a few, you know, a couple of wind punches. But I've never really approached my wagering that way. I'm curious.
Well, I'm blessed, Steve. Like, if you have an Amwager account, we have the dutching tool built into several pools. So I don't dutch to win as often as I always dutch my exactas and my doubles. But it's, you know, it's easy on Amwager because I just tell it, you know, how much I want to spend, and I put in my combinations, and it bases those different, you know, denominations off what the odds are. I mean, it's some people like the box. I'm just not that. I'm more of a key and wheel kind of guy. And in terms of, you know, trying to improve your ROI, I definitely think it has an edge. It's not for everybody, but, you know, if the technology's there, you know, why not use it?
Does that system fluctuate with the fluctuations in the odds and in the will pays, the probables?
Yes. Yeah. It's kind of some of the stuff we have built into the back end of Amwager. We try to, you know, we get odds updates from Tote every 30 seconds, which is, at least when I've done the comparisons to other ADWs, we're faster in terms of the odds changing. So we can, we have the ability to, you know, change the denominations based off current odds. And, you know, our odds are sometimes faster than the video because the video is actually on delay also. That's all built in there.
Interesting. We want people to, you know, utilize all the tools that are laid out in here. And in fact, you know, part of the reason I had a long conversation with Alex from Form to Win yesterday, you know, looking for some interaction too from players who are experiencing the system and using the app. You go to formtowin.com, download. It's been a week so far that people have been able to utilize two free races a day, so you can, you know, really, you can really get a nice test drive here and figure it out, see, you know, what works for you and you know, the adjustments that you make in the settings, you know, for the, you know, for distance when it comes to individual races, paring down the screen as much as you might want to, you know, which to me, at first I didn't do it, Alex, I didn't, when I talked to him about it, about changing some of the interfacing, because there's a lot here, when you first look at it visually, you know, you think to yourself, I'd love to net this out and make it less, not cumbersome, but less of a visual assault. You know what I mean? Taking things out. So those columns that you can net out, that's become, you know, really one of the first things I do when I start on any day is, you know, taking out the columns that are distracting.
Yeah, see, that's the first thing I do also. You know, everybody, every different player is going to have certain things that they want to key on and look at. But once you find those out, you know, just take out the things that you don't want to see. So I primarily look at three columns. And then, you know, that's all really I'm using when I'm using Form to Win, are three basic columns. And then That's how I'm able to make my decision. It's funny that you said, interested about player feedback. We had a player reach out from Australia, Frank, who has been playing the Hong Kong product. And he gave me some angles that I was testing today at SHA 10. And I'll just tell them what they are. If you just rank the horses by best form to win and then also average form to win, you only key on those three horses, you would have had the winner in, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of the 9 races. Frank factors in the jockeys. He's more familiar with the jockeys in Hong Kong. I know nothing about the jockeys in Hong Kong, but he was just using best form to win time, average form to win, no changes for distance, just using those two key measures. And, there were some chalky prices. I'm not going to say that, like, it put it on, but there was a horse that went off 13 or 14 to 1 that won. And, you know, just by using those two criteria, you could have found them.
So I love it.
It's just different angles to play around with. And I encourage, Frank reached out and gave me that information, and I just passed it on to everyone else. So it's out there.
Well, we'll try to get some interactivity too, and get some of the things that people have discovered and share them with everybody. I mean, when I'm talking about what is termed the order columns below, once you hit the analyze button, which is the most powerful and the most, the priority. And if you go below the analyze panel down to the fourth, the fourth right-hand tab, the order columns, and you can just simply take them out. Calculated worst time, the worst equibase figure, race time sampled, foaling date, average weight. I take all these out. Race weight, weight differential, weight difference, and race weight sampled. So I end up the four things that I want to see are the form to win best time, the form to win average time, the equibase average figure, and the equibase best figure. So I've got those four. That's all I really need to see. And then I can, very quickly, bang around, once the analysis has been done. That's what I've been doing.
Yeah, we're in line, Steve. I do pretty much the exact same thing. And I think you brought this up before. One of the things that I've just played over the weekend with it, some of those races at Gulfstream, a nice thing that it does for you is actually pushes horses that are really not as fast. Eliminating horses that can't win are almost as important as finding horses that can. And especially, I've just noticed that the horses that it pushes down to the bottom, especially in terms of average form to win time, if it's got a decent set of data to work with, and by that I mean a number of races. I'm not talking about horses that have run only two or three races, but, five, six, seven races. If they don't fit on form to win, I'm not saying they can't win, but they're not likely to. And I think that's just as important as trying to identify the winner.
Well, I'll mention from that standpoint, it seems to me the sharper the distance, the five, five and a half, six, the sharper the distance, the more powerful that stat seems to be.
Yeah, and I don't know if that, I guess that has to do with just pure speed.
Yeah, no doubt.
That, and form to win, the form to win calculated time, that derivative that we're using is purely speed. There's no trip or anything factored in that. It's purely speed. So that would make sense from that angle.
Yeah, that one, it's funny. I'm looking at, I'm just poking around. I'm at the Sam Houston ninth today. We're going to talk to Chris Griffin next. The last four cards of the season in line for Sam Houston. And there's a horse, Lovey Dovey, is running today at Sam Houston in this allowance. And it just makes me laugh because there's also a horse in the New York circuit, Dovey Lovey. that, in fact, ran in the claiming races, the claiming stakes on Saturday. Did Dovey Lovey. I think actually ran pretty well. And so I just, whenever I see this horse in a race, it doesn't confuse me anymore. But when I first saw Lovey Dovey running at Sam Houston this winter, I'm thinking, wait a minute, how did she end up in Texas? And then it turned out it's not her. It's the inverse of Lovey Dovey and Dovey Lovey. If they could only get together on the racetrack, it'd be a lot of fun to listen to some of the race callers deal with that.
Yeah, that's who's going to call that race, though, Steve, is the question.
Well, Chris Griffin has got the, I guess, the most experience with this filly lately, but any of them, I imagine all of them could have some fun at the least. I think Frank Miramati. I think I want Miramati calling that race.
I'm sure if that ever happens, it'll be memorialized on YouTube forever.
Exactly right. How about before we reach out for Chris Griffin, Papa, what you got a play or two for today?
Well, Steve, if you're looking at Sam Houston, just give me a race and I'll just
pull up the ninth. I looked at the ninth, and
okay.
It's a nice size field.
Ninth, looks like we're going 5 furlongs on the dirt.
Yeah,
I guess I assume it's. I know they've had some rain, but I'm assuming it'll be fast. Or
well,
but if it's not, you can just click the tab for an off track, and you can it'll analyze that stuff too. But yeah, just looking at this race, 5 furlongs. Allowance for 50,000. I'm just going to sort it by average form to win time, and it likes the two a bit. Get a load of this.
Yep.
The interesting horse, if I just look at races between five and five and a half, the four, Joe's the Angel, who's 8-1, is kind of interesting.
I thought the three was too. Trigger 12-1
yeah.
Jumps at you.
Yeah, it's this is a good race. I mean, you get try to find some of these prices underneath in the exact, and so it's. I mean, the horse that it's pushed down, it looks like who was short on the morning line odds, and I watched him go off and win. It did push the seven down some.
Yes, it did. Tomato Bill.
Yeah. Yep. So maybe that's a beatable favorite. Just off what form to win is telling us.
Yeah, the second choice, 7-2, get a load of this for J.R. Caldwell with Goncalves Joe D's Angel, the 4 is 8-1, and Full Trigger, the 3, is 12-1. This is a bettable. The bettable spot. No, just
right.
That's what, and that's it. The best part about this is, I mean, if you're not, particularly if you don't, you want to have some action. This is just, I have found it an incredible resource. I mean, that's what has surprised me about this is that, especially at circuits that you're unfamiliar, places where it happens to be on TV, the other day, the Mahoning Valley sequence, with the force out on the jackpot.
Right, yeah. And Steve, yeah, that's the power, to look at this race and to be able to have some sort of, make some sort of case for some of these horses and push other horses down. And then if you do know the circuit, then you can really drill down and start adjusting your distances. Gulfstream tends to play the speed this horse plays, and you can – you can play around with the filters, even drill down the information even more.
Papo, we'll talk on Friday. We'll handicap, cherry pick some of the terrific races Saturday from Santa Anita and Aqueduct and from Keeneland. And if you got anything, tweet it out. And tomorrow, 4 o'clock, the opportunity on the M-Wager channel, Twitch, and Papo will show some features and handicap some Keeneland. So take part in that as well. I've got, once again, on a Thursday, I can't participate. I've got an eye doctor. I've got my retina, my 6 month retina checkup tomorrow at 3:30. So
that's
unbelievable.
That's a priority. Trust me, I've got a little bit of a retina issue myself going on. So I know you had some surgery a while back, but that's something I may have to get. We'll just have to. I just have to play it by ear here. We'll just have to see.
Well, best wishes, because as Marty McGee will tell you, and I can tell you, it's scary. I mean, it was a scary, and I've never been sick with anything. So this was a weird proposition going back to summer of 19, and you know, pretty much kiboshed Saratoga for that summer. And knock on wood, everything's been good since. But it just so happens that they sent me a text or left me a message yesterday. I've completely forgotten, and they said, you know, here's the protocols for coming into the office. And I was like, ugh, okay. So I get, and plus the worst part is I got to sit there because you know, they dilate you and you know. You know, your eyes go kablooey for, you know, a couple of hours. So,
well, I'm glad you're getting it looked at, Steve, and I appreciate your time today. And we'll try to give out some winners later in the week and say
outstanding,
crew, especially Marty. I do miss seeing you know, Marty, whether on social media or at Gulfstream. He actually came to U of L when I was there going through the equine program and came and spoke and just. I don't know. Seems like a really great guy.
Oh, he's the greatest.
Meet him in person again.
The greatest.
My best wishes to him and what he's gone through, and just glad to see he looks like he's happy and healthy again.
He's getting there. I think he's getting close to 100%. It was a weird winter for him, no doubt, and he had a brutal trip back from. He got involved in that terrible severe weather the other day. Coming back from Florida back to Kentucky. He and his girlfriend had to, stopping in Knoxville, just because the weather was so bad. Anyway, there were tornadoes and stuff. It was crazy. So.
And flooding also.
Yeah. Flooding was,
people that drowned. Yeah. It was really bad down there.
Believable. Papo Morales, everybody. Papo Core One on your Twitter and Amwager and formtowin.com. Download it, and we're going to continue to help you learn how to use it and, you know, pick some impromptu winners. Papo, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Dave. I appreciate your time.
Not at all. Chris Griffin standing by, and the season is winding down. Four cards. If you haven't looked at the four cards that Sam Houston put together to finish the year, they're sending Chris off to Pennsylvania with as many horses to memorize as they possibly could find on the backstretch. Chris, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. It's very true. Yes, send them all. Send them all, get them all in the gates, and I actually get to redeem myself in race number 6 because I mispronounced one name all the way around the racetrack, and I'm looking forward to correcting that today.
who went wrong? What went wrong?
Race number 6, the 3 Van Gilder. I swore the horse
Glider.
Name was Van Glider, and I kept looking at his name. And he's running big races too. He's earned over $186,000. But I, for whatever reason, I kept saying to myself, his name is Van Glider. I thought it sounded good, and I was like, "Yeah, it's got to be Van Glider." Oh, they run around the racetrack. They finish the race, and then I get a text message from somebody, and they're like, "Van Glider, Van Glider." I'm like, "Why are they emphasizing that?" And I look down, and I say, "Oh, it's Van Gilder." Redemption day for Van Gilder. We'll see if he gets to the winner's circle, but I get to make that correction today.
Well, and as it happens, you mentioned that sixth race. I mean, we just handicapped using Form to Win. Papo and I looked at the ninth today, which is a 5-furlong first level allowance sprint, which is a really good race. But you bring up the sixth, and here's a $52,500. In a conditional allowance or 40 claimer, It's got the likes of Sheriff Brown in it and Topper T. You mentioned Van Gilder, and J.R. Caldwell's got a potent entry. This is a terrific race.
Yeah, and I didn't pick any of them. I like Rotation in there. I think Rotation gets a great pace set up. I think that, you know, when you take a look at the last few races this horse is running, it's been kind of just an okay pace scenario, but when he's able to get close, he just is going to close well. And I've liked his performances. I think Raylu's ridden him very well this meet. He was handled pretty easily by Sheriff Brown and Can I Bob and the likes last time, two starts back, but I just think with a bit of a better trip, and there's a lot of pace, man, St. Louis guy is going to go. It looks like Tin Badge has one gear, and it's just to go. I mean, the horse opened up by 12 at Prairie Meadows, so that horse is going to go to the lead. Topper T is stretching out. Sheriff Brown, tactically, is probably going to sit in the best spot, but I think it's 7-2. I was going to go elsewhere and look for some value, and I think Rotation offers that. I just think he's been a little deceptive in his performances, and I think he's going to close well, and I think he could pass them all.
Well, this was a classy bunch that come together in this spot, and part of just a sequence of days that, I mean, I haven't dug into, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at all, but I just, you know, 10, 12, 12, 12, 10, every race, 9, 11.
The racing office, Frank Hoff, his whole department, you know, racing secretary James Leatherman, and just I could go down the list of the hardworking people and the horsemen that get involved. And we had the weather that kind of happened for that week. So when you lose that week of racing, you know, and now two purse increases and finishing up the season, we added today's program. This was going to be a day off initially, but now it's an added Wednesday afternoon program, and we've got some big fields. Great racing. We've added that early pick 5 at 12% takeout. There's going to be an early and a late. So just a reminder, you know, with these nice field sizes and seeing these fields that we've got assembled, if there is a carryover in that early pick 5, it goes right into the late pick 5. So if you're handicapping that card, you could be looking at an instant carryover type situation during some of these races. And then, yeah, we close things out on Saturday with 3 $75,000 stakes races, some nice horses in there. Two pretty solid favorites, but then you look at the Miss Houston Turf, and it's got also eligibles on there, and you've got just a really, really competitive race on the grass. So that's going to be great for Saturday. We'll see what happens here on a Wednesday and a Thursday. Seems like we get a pick 6 carryover every other day, seemingly, as we've gone through the program, and we could see it again. I think if you catch some of those mid-range prices, you talk about race number 9, that's a tough event in there, that 5-furlong sprint. I like to get a load of this in there. I felt like if this horse just gets to the lead, he's just been tough. Leandro Goncalves, congratulations to him. He gets his 2,000th career win last weekend. And a lot of great things, a lot of great positives, and looking to finish the meet strong. You know, 4 more days, and Sam Houston deserves it, and let's get through it. And, of course, a 40% chance of rain today, Steve, so can't forget to mention that as well.
I got a couple of questions for you too. Go to the 9th again, because Papo and I, using Form to Win, Get a Load of This is the horse to beat, as opposed to Tomato Bill, who's the 5-2 morning line favorite, Asmussen and Stewie. But who else down the chart here are you interested in? Because there's a couple of prices that we kind of noted, and I'm curious if there's a I'm going to just let you go unprompted and see if you have any interest in any of the prices that came up minutes ago.
Just on the card in general, or race number 9?
No, in the 9th, with Get a Load of This, with the 2.
Yeah, Get a Load of This is going to be 7-2. I think could go a little bit shorter than that, I was thinking, because if you look at that last performance, you know, this horse has got 21-2, 44-3 type speed. He's going to open up, and he's going to send from the rail. I mean, there's not going to be any question as far as the tactics, I think. He's going to go. He ran 2 starts back against Good Judgment. Good Judgment was odds on to win on Texas Champions Night and didn't get it done. Also comes out of a race where Shifty Henry was in there. Shifty Henry had handled some of these, had beaten the likes of a Tomato Bill and some of these other runners. So I think that at 5 furlongs, it looks like it's just going to be go, go, go. Jody's Angel coming off the turf, I don't think that horse can run with Get a Load of This. I also don't know about Valiant Appeal. This is the other one that kind of I kept going back and forth. I said, man, the horse has won 3 races in a row. But it doesn't look like he has a gear where he can just stock off the pace setter and run by him. The last 3 have all been, gate to wire, right to the front, finish him off. I don't think he gets the lead in here against Get a Load of This. I don't think he's quick enough to run with this horse. If he does show a different ability to be able to stalk, he could win that race. A horse that's won 3 in a row that's going to be 6-1 and continues to move through the conditions holds a lot of appeal. But coming from non-winners of 4, now in here facing multiple winners is a tough spot. The other knock against Tomato Bill is the horses have 1 lifetime win. You know, it's a 4-year-old colt that has only won once, and he's facing a horse in Get a Load of This, a hard-knocking veteran that's earned over 100,000 now, that's won twice this year and has won 6 lifetime races. You know, I think these are the ones that you kind of play against. The rail draw was the concern for Get a Load of This, but Leandro Goncalves is just, he's ridden that rail, the inside path, very, very well. He just seems to get horses to relax and send, and he gets to the quarter pole. He looks like he's in hand. And then they open up and they've got a bit more. So J.R. Caldwell, 2nd in the standings. He's going to finish behind Steve Asmus. And they've had just an amazing meet and how they teamed up together and paired up here. It's going to set them up for the rest of the season as well. So I liked it too. I think 7-2 is a nice price. I hope we get that 7-2. I think might go a little shorter, just my personal opinion of it. But we'll see. I think there's going to be a lot of people playing against Tomato Bill in that spot. I do. I think that that looks like a vulnerable favorite in that spot.
Well, because the two prices that came up were the 3 and the 4, Full Trigger and Jody's Angel. And yeah. Jody's Angel particularly doesn't look like he has to have a portion of the lead. He's run well. Stalking that race, in fact, where he was elevated and graduated. I kind of like a horse like this that got kissed in for the maiden breaker, but then came back and won himself by on his own, which is admirable. Granted, it was 15-2, but there's some appeal to this horse and 8-1. Certainly is the right price. Happens to be a British Columbia bred, and the Texas bred. That Full Trigger is 12-1 for Anthony Arai, making a first start of the season off the claim. And where's he based?
I mean, I'm just looking at the competition that they've been facing a little bit. Finishing ahead of a horse like With the Band, Paw Salty Pepper. I mean, these are horses that I've seen on the circuit, and those horses just tend to kind of complete some of your exactas and tries, And then
that might be okay.
And this is a barn that's claimed off of Austin Gustafson. We'll see how that move works. The horse has been tackling, you look at Daryl's Little Diablo, we look at Bubba Bling didn't come back and run very well. Daryl's Little Diablo, Best Little Man, another one that's a Texas bred that just is kind of completing those trifectas in some of these Texas bred stakes. So for the Texas bred, it's an opportunity, of course, to run against the likes of some of these other runners. But I just think against open company in here with the horses that some of these others have been facing, when I see Bourbon Cowboy, Shifty Henry, Good Judgment, when I see all of those in the running lines, I'm going to go that direction. Jody's Angel, this race is on the dirt, so that would be the question for me for sure. Did run against Empire of Gold, and Empire of Gold has turned out to be a very nice sprinter. So, in that debut effort, we'll see. I think they can complete the exotics. I would be hard-pressed to put them on the win end. Here.
No, I
do like some prices, but yeah, I think completing some of your exotics might be the best route.
Well, and that's the that's the concept too. I mean, was the looking, because I Get a Load of This, it seems like the right horse from every and the fact that you landed there immediately only reemphasizes it. Anything else on today's card that you're excited about betting?
Yeah, I think that it gets pretty interesting there in race number 7. I really like rotation, obviously. So I'd probably be looking at some sort of ticket where I'm singling rotation, and then I want to spread a little. I think that seventh race, that allowance, 1 mile on the turf for state bred, as much speed as I saw in that sixth race, I'm just not seeing the speed here. I think the five, Olga's Son, ran okay. The horse had come back off of a long layoff, hadn't run since September of 19, came back on February, right here on the 27th, ran in a 30,000 mile winners of three and showed speed. She obviously needed that, or he obviously needed that race. And if you go back to some of those efforts at Retama and Lone Star, the horse can kind of stick around a bit longer. I think that running behind Moorhawk, Arrow Street, TJB Ura, you know, the company that this horse has been keeping, it might be a little bit of a question mark. And then right next door, you take a look at a horse like the number six, Jewel Street. That horse ran against I'm a Discreet Lady, who came back and won impressively sprinting on the dirt. And she's a hard-knocking Texas bred. So I think that seventh race is where you find a lot of the value. I think there's some vulnerable favorites in there. I was not a Farm's Faith fan. I think the horse, you know, ended up with a perfect trip in there and got to the winner's circle after, what was it, nine tries. And it's going to be 9-2, a pretty short price. I'm playing against that one. True Saint comes off of a bunch of dirt efforts, now tries the turf. It's 4-1 on the morning line, playing against there. Baozun is an interesting one, playing the blinkers on, but if you look at the turf try in there, 10th beaten 12 and 3 quarters, that didn't look like a great effort. So, you know, I think that there's value to be had in that seventh race. John Doe is as vulnerable as a favorite as they get. I've loved this horse since his debut effort. I called it, and it was impressive. I even texted people. I said, who is that? He just hasn't quite had the same type of kick that I saw what he was doing in 2020. He really needs to pick it up a little bit. He did run behind Mujab Jr., Sunlit Song, some really, really good turf runners, obviously, in the Houston turf on preview day. But he's going to really have to step it up, and especially going to have to do that at a short price again. So the value just not quite there for me. And then the 10th and final, I thought Lane Leslie picking up that mount on Black Rock Castle was pretty interesting. I think the horse will be a little bit more forwardly placed than we've seen in the last two starts. The horse is by declaration of war. He didn't like the post last time. He was way to the outside of in the 12th spot. I think now breaking from the rail, Lane gets better tactical position. 9-2. I think that's a really good price there on that horse in the finale and that maiden special weight event for him to finally get that maiden breaker, because, you know, you're facing some horses that have shown that they just run behind other horses. The Perfect Samurai, Heliochrome is going to probably have to send from the outside, from the post position 12, taking the blinkers off, might not break as quickly as we had seen. Play against for me there. So, yeah, I like Black Rock Castle to close things out. And finding kind of these mid-range horses, I'm okay with 7-2, 9-2, 4-1, you know, try and find their spots there. But that seventh race is the one where I think things can get a little hectic. I think that there are some real vulnerable favorites in there, and I think you can catch a double-digit price indeed there in race seven.
Very nice. So, in other words, you're saying that John Doe is a bit of an unknown.
No better way to close the season than that one.
I can't help myself, Chris. It just happened.
It was an absolute joy. You and Casey, the entire team, we had a really good time at Sam Houston. Enjoyed the coverage, and hopefully, folks out there enjoyed it as well. And
very much.
I will see everyone on the East Coast, and let's call these 4 days of racing and not say Van Glider, and I think we'll be okay.
Well, don't feel bad. Yesterday, Ron Fauché had to whack me after I gave him a French Canadian pronunciation of Fauché, which, you know, if he was training at Hippodrome Blue Bonnets, it'd be Fauché. But down there in Acadiana, they it's Fauché. So he corrected me. So I don't feel bad. Chris, when's your first day at Parks?
So I'm leaving on Sunday. I'm going to head over there, and then I'm looking to probably start right around the 12th. So we got to finalize some things. I got to make sure that I get all my paperwork and stuff squared away once I get there. But Yeah, it should be around that April 12th time, I do believe. That's not an official date. I got to talk with them and make sure that I get everything squared away, but it'll be right around that time.
Well, looking forward to hearing you at the mic in Bensalem as well, and really have had fun, and we'll do some more Sam Houston. We'll close it out with, on Friday with Nick Tamaro, but it's been a great season. Congratulations to everybody involved.
Thanks so much, Steve. Thanks to the bettors out there, and have fun. 4 days. Here we go.
In the Grandstand on Twitter, that's Chris Griffin, everybody, and you'll hear him back soon enough at Parks, starting on April 12th. Pretty cool. Seth Merrow is standing by. And, Seth, I'm sorry about the Orange Man.
Oof. That's been the kind of their MO over the last few seasons, though. Every once in a while, they throw in a game where they just cannot score. And you can't, you know, you can't get to the final 16 teams and have a night like that. It was just and Buddy Boeheim wasn't scoring the way he does. And if you get at least one guy going, then the defense kind of has to go to them a little bit when they get the ball. And so that can get other guys going also. But nobody was going. So it's just, yeah, it was a long night.
Well,
the key play there, though, was when the ball bounced out a long defensive rebound for Syracuse, and Buddy Boeheim tipped it, and Guerrier was already on his way, and the tip was just a little short. Guerrier had kind of had to hesitate a second, and then it got awkward, and instead of scoring the basket and knocking it to six, they missed it, or he lost the ball, and then Houston came back and scored. So rather than going to six, it went up to 10, and that was maybe the five-minute mark or something. I knew that. I was like, all right, it's not going well.
Well, the Boeheim was so nice about it, and is, you know, he's been just so gracious through this period, and he had a big day on Twitter yesterday. If you weren't following, if you weren't following what was going on with the Syracuse fans yesterday,
I didn't see, but I try to avoid those kind of things on Twitter. But he's just I've said this before. I think in real life he's a nice guy, but he gets into those post-game press conferences, and I just think, dude, these ink-stained wretches who are just trying to get a quote for their paper, you're making like 10 times what these guys are making. Just come out, answer the questions, go back to the locker room, but he has to spar with them every time.
Well, and some of the firestorm was over the point guard that is transferring, Kateri Richmond.
He has said, and it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. That just scares Syracuse, everybody, with the transfer rules changing. But Boeheim said 3 or 4 weeks ago he was expecting to lose guys just because guys now, and I think it's true. If you have any kind of idea in your head, I'm not getting enough playing time, you're looking to go someplace else. And like I say, it's not just Syracuse. It's going to be everybody. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out as we get to the end of the season and then going into next season.
Well, if you're somebody who's personable and who who can interact, you know, at a quality level with your players, then you know, chances are you can retain them, as opposed to him, who just yesterday was funny, and I almost entered the fray with my own exactly what I had told you from, you know, I said I experienced it 40 years ago. What did people think he was going to mellow? Did you think he was a get off my lawn guy in his 30s?
I like that. That is a great description when you watch those press conferences.
Unbelievable! Get off my lawn. Get out of my gym.
That's
unbelievable.
Exactly what it's like. Yes, you got it. You nailed it.
I'm shortchanging you here. It's been a great. We had a very full morning with Alan Foreman and Tony Alvato and Sid and more. So I kind of shortchanged you. Any pressing thoughts from the weekend? You got 45 seconds.
Known agenda looked great. I thought all three of those, soup and sandwich being lightly raced, but for me, the result of the Jeff Ruby, I really like Sainthood. And I think Sainthood was the best horse in that race. But the stewards made the right decision. The horse that bothered him was the horse that wound up running fourth, who came
right.
out. The King, the Wesley Ward runner, was the legitimate winner. So I just, but I think Sainthood was the best horse in there. So I was kind of kicking myself with the results of that race. But,
It's funny. I when I handicapped on Saturday and rode it up, that horse grabbed me. And I even checked with Dave Norton, who you may know, Pace and Dave, and you know who clocks at Palm Beach Downs. And I wrote to Dave. I texted him. I said, what's the story with this Sainthood? Because I think he could be live in here. And I thought there was a, you know, there was every chance for a while that that he could still win. But I talked to him. I talked to Todd yesterday about him a little bit. He's okay, that horse. That horse is going to go places. Well, Seth, we'll catch up. Starting to get serious, and we'll get you a full visit next week.
Sounds good. Good luck to everybody this afternoon and into the weekend with some more Derby preps.
You got one play, one horse. Give us one horse today.
One horse. Maybe go for the two Deeney horses at Tampa. I'm just flipping through here to see. There's two uncoupled Deeney horses somewhere in those last four. Oh, in race 9, the 3 and the 4, one of them's 15-1. Kind of toss them into your mix. Race number 9 at Tampa, 3 Baby Be Merry and 4 Dixieland Darling.
The 3 and the 4, one of Seth's pets, Mike Dinney. he's the new shepherd.
somebody texted that to me. Hey, he's your Tampa shepherd. I thought about it. I said, yes, he is.
Tampa shepherd. That's pretty good. Seth Merrow 2, everybody on your Twitter. Papo Morales, formtowin.com. Chris Griffin, a great season at SHRP. Tony Olivato and the amazing deal between Fox and Naira. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hill and Dale, Sid Fernando, and Alan Foreman to start the day. Good luck today. Talk to you tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only 3 states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-9 3-8-4-6-4-3.